Our reading this morning is one of the legends told of the Desert Fathers, a quirky band of monks who in the 3rd century wandered the desert in search of God. The stories told about the Desert Fathers are a little bit like Zen cones. They don't give easy answers, but invite reflection. Let us then reflect on this story. One day, Abbot Lot came to his teacher, Abbot Joseph, and said, "Father, as best as I am able, I keep my little fast, my little rule, my little prayer, but it's not enough. And Father, as best as I am able, I keep my meditation and my contemplative silence, and I strive to cleanse my heart of all unnecessary desires, but it's not enough. I still haven't found what I seek. Father, what shall I do?" In reply, Abbot Joseph, the elder, rose up and stretched out his hands to the heavens, and his fingers became like 10 burning lamps, and he said to the Abbot Lot, "Why not be totally changed into fire?" I don't know about you, but I can relate to the befuddled monk in our story, Abbot Lot. I can relate to his frustrations. You see, he's been working at the spiritual life for years now, praying and meditating, trying all the practices that folks have taught him, but to no avail. Something's still missing. He still hasn't found any answers to the questions that in quiet moments make him tremble. Why am I here? What is my purpose? He still hasn't found whatever it is that will fill that empty place inside of him. That place that just longs and longs and longs to be filled. If Abbot Lot were living in now, I think he'd be familiar to us. I think he'd be the seeker who's been dabbling in the spiritual life for a while now. Trying this and that, you know, a little yoga on Thursdays after work, maybe church on Sunday, the latest bestseller from Thich Nhat Hanh on the bedside table. Searching but not finding. So in his frustrations, he goes to his teacher and says, "Master, I've tried everything you taught me, and still it's not enough. What more can I do?" Now here's where the story gets a little strange. Because instead of telling Abbot Lot to give it a little more time or to trade in his yoga mat for a Buddhist meditation pillow, instead of that, his teacher stretches his hands up to the heavens, and each of his fingertips burst into flames. And he says, "Why not be totally changed to fire?" Friends, this morning I'd like you to consider what it would mean for us to be changed to fire. Can I tell you a story? Many Unitarian Universalists are familiar with the name James Reeb. Reeb was a Unitarian minister who in March of 1965 heeded Dr. King's call for white ministers to join him at a march in Selma, Alabama. Reeb went to Selma, and on the night of the march he was bludgeoned to death by 4 white segregists. His brutal murder prompted President Johnson to sign the Civil Rights Act of 1965. This year marked, 2 years ago, the 40th anniversary of that landmark legislation and of Reeb's martyrdom. Now, whenever I hear about someone like James Reeb, I always want to know, what's their story? You know, what kind of path leads a person to such sacrifice? Jim Reeb's faith journey was an interesting one. It turns out he grew up in a conservative Christian, a pretty severe Calvinist. In fact, when he was a student at Princeton Seminary, Reeb once handed in a paper called The Wrath of God, in which he wrote with downright gusto about God's judgment upon sinful and depraved humanity. A few years later, though, Reeb found himself the chaplain at the Philadelphia General Hospital, where his patients were the poor and the indigent of the city, many of them addicts. There he had something of a crisis of faith. You see, his theology told him that these people deserved their suffering, that it was God's punishment for their sins, that it was God's just punishment for their sins. But there was some other voice inside Reeb that told him something different. But no, these are your brothers and sisters who deserve your love and compassion. And there in a hospital room in Philly, Reeve experienced what can only be described as a conversion. A generous and loving spirit seized him and melted his cold Calvinist heart. Suddenly he realized that any God worth worshiping was a God who heaped mercy and love upon those who suffered, not judgment and scorn. During this time, Reeve wrote something telling in his journal. He wrote, when the moralist in you dies, then life begins. This was the turning point for Jim Reeve, the moment after which his life would never be the same. The moment when he was gripped by a transforming and commanding love that would not let him go. That led him to a life ministering to the poor of America's cities and eventually to the streets of Selma, Alabama. This, I think, is what Abbot Joseph was talking about when he said, why not totally be changed to fire? He was saying to Abbot Lot, all your dabbing in the spiritual life will go for naught until you give your whole life over to love. Only a commanding and transforming love can answer the question, why am I here? Only a commanding and transforming love can fill that space inside that longs and longs and longs. We live in a culture that is enamored with the notion of spiritual growth. There's an entire spiritual growth industry in America. Flooded the markets with books and props and prayers that promise to enlighten us. But there's something missing from this culture. There's a secret that the gurus of growth aren't telling us. And it's a secret that Abbot Joseph revealed to Abbot Lot, that the spiritual life isn't about dabbling here and there. It's about giving over one's life to love. Abbot Joseph called it being changed into fire. Jim Reeve described it differently. Did you hear what he wrote in the journal? When the moralist in you dies, then life begins. Jim Reeve was talking about being born again. Now let me pause here and acknowledge that phrase, born again, makes some of us cringe, right? So often it comes with a theological and increasingly political agenda that religious liberals find untenable. Some on the religious left have voiced their displeasure with the idea of being born again. A bumper sticker I saw recently while waiting in traffic on Washington Beltway, the bumper sticker said, born right the first time. It's a good line, isn't it? And it does speak to something central to Unitarian Universalism, our belief that human beings are fundamentally good creations. But after thinking about it for a while, born right the first time struck me as at best naive and at worst arrogant. As if to say, maybe you need to be born again. But I've got it all figured out. I'm all right just as I am. The truth is, I don't know anyone who feels that way. Who deep down doesn't yearn for something more in their lives. I don't think born right the first time is a sufficient theology. On the other hand, I'm not satisfied with the notion of being born again, because it suggests that religious transformation is somehow a once-in-a-lifetime event. You know, I'm born again. I'm saved. Now I'm all set. My own position is probably best summed up by the Unitarian poet E.E. Cummings, who once wrote, "We can never be born enough." We can never be born enough. To live in this world, we must always be prepared to be born again in love. Always prepared to be shaken out of our complacency and small-heartedness. And plunged into the bracing waters of life. Rebaptized in love. We can never be born enough. Think about it for a moment. Isn't life always calling us to rebirth? When a loved one dies and we find the strength to continue on, we are born again. When we come out of the closet as a gay or lesbian and embrace a new identity, we are born again. When it feels like we're down to our last broken heart, yet somehow we find a way to love once more. We are born again. When our hearts that have been hardened to the suffering of the world burst open in compassion, we are born again. With each rebirth, that commanding and transferring love takes hold of our hearts, our battered old heart, and stretches it further than we thought it could stretch. I'm talking about a suppleness of heart. That's what it takes to be born again. This is the spiritual transformation that Unitarian Universalists call us to. Not the complacency of those who were born right the first time, not the one-size-fits-all, all path of the born again, but the generous and supple heart of those who can never be born enough. I guess if I had to sum it up on a bumper sticker, it would say, born again and again. James Luther Adams, one of the great theologians of our movement, recognized that without this transformation, the religious life is ineffectual. He said the element of commitment, of change of heart, has been neglected by religious liberalism, and that the prime source of enfeeblement. We liberals are largely an uncommitted and therefore self-frustrating people. We need conversion within ourselves. Only by some conversion can we be possessed by a love that will not let go. Friends, I hope we can hear words of Adams as a challenge to us, a challenge for our own spiritual lives as well as a challenge for our religious movement and for the larger cause of progressive religion in America. You know, we've gathered here in Texas, this is Texas today, with a focus this week on how to better articulate our values in the larger world. We're even going to hear from George Lakoff later today. He's the guy that the Congressional Democrats have hired to help them talk about values. 2 years later, how's it going? I'm looking forward to Lakoff's talk, but my message this morning is that the primary challenge facing religious liberals is not a communications challenge, but a spiritual one. Until the religious left can offer all those seekers out there a compelling story of how their lives can be filled with meaning and transformed by love, then we don't stand a chance. Until we are willing to invite the Abbot Lots of our world into our midst to be changed into fire, then our strength will not grow. The answer to the marginalization of the religious left will not be spin, it would be fire. Whether or not we are willing to be totally changed into fire. I believe with all my heart that Unitarian Universalism has a saving message for our broken world. And I just want to close by sharing that message with you in my own words. I serve a church whose name is All Souls. It's actually a popular name for Unitarian Universalist churches. Now I know I'm biased, but I happen to believe that All Souls is just about the best name for a church. For those two words are summed up all that is good and holy and true about religion. I mean, can you imagine a church that called itself Some Souls Church? They'd never admit it, but isn't that the de facto name of the dominant religious culture in America? The religious right worships a God of some souls, a God who plays favorites, a God who picks and chooses, separating the wheat from the chaff, the saved from the damned, the chosen from the forgotten. September 11th reminds us of how bloody a God who picks and chooses can be. Friends, the good news that we Unitarian Universalists must deliver to the world, the good news that Jim Reed discovered in that hospital room in Philly, is that a God who picks and chooses is no God at all. It is an idol. And against this superfluous faith, we must preach the old universalist gospel of a love that invites all souls to be welcomed to the welcome table, not some. A love that can take hold of our hearts and lead us to lives of meaning and purpose. Now there's a message that is big enough and generous enough and loving enough to capture the hearts and minds of the people. In fact, the message is so good, it almost sounds too good to be true. But as Mae West once warned, too much of a good thing is wonderful. Other folks worship a God of some souls, and they have the audacity to call that the good news. We stand for a commanding and transforming love that embraces all souls, and I dare say that is even the better news. Let's go out there and live it.